Let's start what we have come into the room to do.
Welcome back. This is Harlem, and this is the Fresh Ubuntu podcast. And, you know, I was going to do the Guild edition of this podcast, but I don't think we're going to have a whole lot of time to, you know, play around with this one. So we're on a limited time frame today. So we are just going to go ahead, my co-host Peter and I, with the news. Peter, how you doing?
I'm okay. Guild edition?
Yeah, I was going to introduce myself as... You know, my role-playing game name, and tell you what my powers were, and etc.
And I would have to, yes, and I was going to speak in a Scottish accent like a dwarven paladin, right?
Exactly. So
gotcha. But I think it's in everyone's best interest that we don't do that.
Not today. So, anyway, so enough fun and games, I guess. We'll save that for another podcast at another time. But today we have sort of a grab bag affair of, you know, tiny little tits and tats and whatever you want to call them. So the first one we will do today is I was looking around at Inkscape. I'm trying to do a logo for the Fresh Ubuntu podcast, which I have done, and I'm putting the finishing touches on it, which will segue nicely into the new upgraded freshubuntu.org site. Anyway, I'll announce that in the end of the podcast, but Inkscape today has announced a new feature called Interpolate, which takes two seemingly unattached things or unrelated items and fills in the gaps between the paths and transforms one thing into the other thing. And sounds like a neat little feature for Inkscape. Inkscape, of course, is an open source vector drawing program available for Linux, and roundaboutly available for Ubuntu. So just tiny little bit of news from Inkscape. And what do you got, Peter?
I've got a couple of things. The first thing I have is an announcement, a new distribution development release, or I don't know if it's a development release or a fully functional release, but Shift Linux version 0.6 has come out. And it came out just a few days ago, and this is now based on Ubuntu. I have not played with Shift Linux just yet. I'm not exactly sure what its claim to fame is. They come out with three different versions. They have a GNOME version, a KDE version, and a Lite version, which packages XFCE and Fluxbox, which sounds a lot like, you know, Ubuntu, Kubuntu, and Zubuntu, obviously,
right.
Or Fluxbuntu.
Fluxbuntu, right.
They said these are live CDs, fully loaded with all the popular packages, etc., and that it's, you know, geared towards a new user to make it an easy, good experience, etc., etc. All kinds of stuff that I've heard from Ubuntu itself and other Ubuntu-based distros. So I don't know really what sets Shift Linux apart, but if you want to check it out, go to shiftlinux.net and check it out.
I think what makes this interesting is that it's from the NeoWin community. It's a huge tech community, you know, Windows stuff, Mac stuff, and apparently Linux stuff too. So,
yeah, I'm not familiar really with NeoWin. What do you know anything more about that?
I believe it's a forum. Where you can ask questions. It's a support type site, I guess. I've been on it a couple of times. Just a community of tech minded people, you know, from all platforms, and sharing, you know, stuff about whatever they want to, I guess. But that's from that community.
Neat. Okay.
Yeah, interesting little project that they got going on. It's Shift Linux. I'm curious to see if anyone out there is using it or has used it. So if you are, please write us at freshubuntu@gmail.com or petern@freshubuntu.org or harlem@freshubuntu.org. Next up, we have Asus prepping a $500 iMac killer triple E PC desktop. It's going to be a 42-inch all-in-one PC to rival the iMac. And get this, it's going to have a 42-inch monitor. Don't know exactly yet when that's going to come out or if it's going to run Linux at all, but I'm assuming it will be able to, since one of their other PCs, the small diminutive triple E PC, the 7-inch screen one, runs Red Hat or a version of Red Hat. But this also includes a TV tuner. So you can watch TV and play on the computer at the same time, possibly. But anyway, they're looking for it to cost around $500.
That sounds pretty cool. 42-inch screen. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. I've got two 17-inch displays on my desktop, and wow.
The curiosity to me is going to be the radiation effect on standing so close to a 42-inch screen, you know, all day
long. Did you notice on the image, along with the article that you sent, it shows you know, a girl in a bikini top there at the beach. Admittedly, she's got an EPC, but it could be that, you know, that's actually she's just tanning in front of one of these new boxes.
Could be.
You don't need to go outside.
Although I don't see the computer. I'm not really noticing the computer right now. So,
well,
I don't know why.
If you look, the EPC is pretty small.
Yeah. Or something else may be distracting.
So, could be.
Yeah.
All right. Next piece of info we have comes from France.
Vive la France.
Vive la France, indeed. The Gendarmerie Nationale, the French National Police Force, has announced the migration of up to 70,000 computers to Ubuntu over the next 3 years.
Woohoo.
And we'll have an article on that on the Canonical blog. But I thought that was kind of cool. We hear a lot of those. I mean, we haven't heard any of these recently, but last year, I know, over on the Linux Action Show, it was like every week they were coming up with another, you know, 100,000 or so many, you know, places are switching over to Linux. So
that's right.
I thought that was pretty cool.
That is the march towards Linux, and many, many international places are doing it too. Perhaps a cost-saving venture or just want to, you know, be a bunch of followers. I don't know. But I did hear that the Philippines is also getting 30,000 Linux computers, Ubuntu computers. Mm-hmm. So adoption rates are quickening as the new year begins. Also, by the way, I heard that Bill Gates is in France just because of this possible Ubuntu migration here.
Oh?
Yeah, I just was looking at one of the articles on Dig saying, is anybody curious why Bill Gates is in France? And it coincides with the migration to Ubuntu from the French National Police Force. So I don't know if that is true or not. It could possibly be true. It's, you know, it's sort of hearsay right now. So.
Huh.
Some other big news that happened in the past week before or a little after the last podcast, or maybe the day of the last podcast, is that Nokia buys Trolltech. And of course, Trolltech is the makers of the Qt engine, or otherwise known as the KDE graphical user interface. And I don't know if this is a good thing or bad thing. You know, the week before, it was MySQL being bought up by Sun, and this week, it happens to be Nokia buying Trolltech. So we see some corporate, I guess, aggregation of some open source, entities, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
I read a little bit about it, and I don't think we have much to worry about from here. I think this will be a good thing. And I think this, you know, I don't know. I'd like to think that this will strengthen Nokia's commitment to Linux. Although, of course, you know, Qt libraries and KDE don't necessarily need to be running on Linux. But if given a choice between Symbian and Linux, I would love to see Nokia start, you know, putting out massive amounts of Linux-based portable units and phones and stuff. So I'm hopeful that this is going to be a good thing.
I am too. And we will see, as I'm always saying, time will tell on this podcast, but some big happenings, I guess. So let's go on with the next one.
Next article I had was just a little observation over at geek.com saying that the low-cost, ultra-portable segment is about to explode. And I think they mean that in a good way. basically, following on the, quote, incredible success of the Asus EPC, other manufacturers are ready to get their piece of the pie. And I read somewhere they in reference to this article was saying that something like three out of the top 10 best-selling computers right now are, you know, are Linux-based ultra-portable machines. And or they maybe it was just inexpensive machines, but I thought that was pretty neat. And they're talking about, you know, it's not just Asus now. We're going to see these things from Acer, Dell, EverX, the folks who made the GPC at Walmart,
right?
Hewlett Packard, you know, a couple of other names you might have heard.
Yeah.
So you know, I think this is a pretty cool thing. I think, you know, the one laptop per child initiative obviously deserves a nod to getting this all started off. So I'm really looking forward to see where this goes.
I agree. And let's not forget Clump PC. I believe that's running strictly Linux, too. It's another small form factor PC, and just wanted to put that in the mix as well. And funny that you should say that. This podcast is going to have a review of the Asus Triple EPC. I just happened to come by one, and so I'll mention that later at later on in the podcast. So anyway, thanks OLPC. You've really let this avalanche effect get going. So.
Pretty cool.
Uh-huh. Speaking of KDE as well, KDE has gone cross-platform, and I was really amazed by this. Ars Technica has a little article that was published on January 23rd, and they said that the open-source KDE desktop environment is making the jump across platforms with broad support for Windows and Mac OS X. The core KDE desktop programs, meaning KOffice Suite and Amarok, are also actively being ported. Interesting event is happening here, especially with the KDE people. I think what they might be trying to do is getting their development cycle in sync with many of the releases coming out, you know. So, when somebody releases a new, you know, version of, say, Red Hat or whatever, they can put on the new version of KDE. So, that's what I'm thinking. However, this cross-platform thing, I was tempted to put it on my Vista machine, too. So, I haven't done it yet, but I hear there's a lot of bugs and it takes a lot of work. So if anyone out there has done it, please let us know, because I would really like to know about it. I'd like to put it on my own Vista computer too.
Yeah, I'd like to see if you're running KDE on Windows, you know, drop us an email or shoot me a note on Twitter. That'd be pretty cool. I'd like to see it. You know, I'd like to see Kate running on Windows. I think that'd be pretty slick.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to do it myself anytime soon, but I think it would be pretty slick.
Right. What I'm interested in is the, you know, the speed factor, you know, and how quick it runs on a Windows platform. I don't think it would be any much more different than running on a Linux platform, but, you know, remains to be seen. So if anyone out there is running it or wants to run it or knows a little bit more about it, contact us here at our email addresses.
Cool. The next little bit of news I had, not a super news item, but just the fact that it was a celebrity kind of speaking out in favor of Ubuntu. Jamie Heineman from Mythbusters, apparently in the February issue of Popular Mechanics, has published some of the things that he hates, seven tech headaches. One of the tech headaches he mentions is bloatware and all kinds of extra garbage coming on computers. He says, in our tech world, this phenomenon is known as software bloat or feature bloat. It's a well-documented problem and a frequent complaint about Windows operating systems. And his recommended fix? Switch to a Linux-based OS such as Ubuntu.
Way to go. You know, I used to...
Way to go, Jamie.
I watched Mythbusters when I was overseas, like 24-7. We only got, like, four English-speaking channels. And one of them happened to be the Discovery Channel. And while I was there, they were doing a Mythbusters marathon. So I may have watched, well, I don't know, half of the episodes ever of all the Mythbusters. So
quite an interesting show. You could be doing with your time.
That's true. I learned a few things, too. Yeah.
And did you see last week the it's a pretty popular article on Eichen Has Cheeseburger?
No.
On Mythbusters?
Uh-uh.
All right. I'll send you a link to include in the show. It's definitely worth bringing in there. So basically, to summarize, if you haven't seen the picture, Jamie Hyneman has a lolcat, a doppelganger, you know, a double. So it's pretty hilarious.
Okay. We'll put a link in the show notes at freshubuntu.org. And all these links will be on freshubuntu.org as well. I think that's it, right? Did you have...
Yeah. That's it for news. We've got a couple of little tech tidbits, and then I want to hear about that Asus that you've been reviewing.
Yeah, I've got that Asus triple APC. It's the 4 GB one, and I'm going to nice little segue here to do a little hands-on review of it and let you know all about it coming up in our next segment. Well, there's been a lot of ruckus on the internet lately in the past couple of months since the introduction of the Asus Triple EPC, and I had the good fortune of getting my hands on one of them, and I did a little review and played around with it for a little bit of the time, and I am so far have been quite impressed with it. But first, in the immortal words of Nacho Libre, let's get down to the nitty-gritty, okay? Let's check out the stats for the Asus Triple EPC. And for now, you can get a Triple EPC through Amazon.com. And the particular one that I got my hands on was a 4G model. And that, of course, comes with Linux preloaded. And I believe, it is Zandros, the Zandros operating system with the Linux kernel in there. It is, of course, Linux it is Windows XP compatible, as they say. And they also mentioned that in the user's manual. Continuing on, we also get a port for Ethernet, and you get Wi-Fi that's built in. 512 megabytes of RAM, which is quite small for this day and age, but, you know, bear with me. Stay with me on this review, and I'll let you in on some. I guess some trade secrets, I suppose. But anyway, we have Wi-Fi. You got 512 megabytes of memory. This particular PC, the Triple E or EEE PC, however you want to say it, comes with a 4 GB SSD card or storage capacity, I would say. SSD stands for solid state disk. In other words, it's essentially a flash drive on there. It also is bundled with a webcam built in, has high definition audio stereo speakers on the left and right side of the screen. Let me see here. It also comes with a built-in microphone, which is kind of nice. I'll show you some pictures of it a little bit later, or at least I'll upload them onto the site at freshubuntu.org. It has a 4-cell battery with a claimed 2.8 to 3.5 hours, of course, depending on the use. You know, you might get more, you might get less, depending on how you use it. And it's very lightweight, coming in at a very svelte 0.92 kilograms. So that's pretty much the stats for it. And let's get along with the look on boot up and setup. Essentially, once you've charged the battery, shouldn't take too long, 5 or 6 hours to fully charge the lithium ion battery. I let it go for about 7 hours, made sure it was well charged, and turned on the PC. And at boot up, the first thing you will see is the license agreement. The license agreement is par for the course for anybody using any type of software or even hardware nowadays. You are licensed to do what is in the license agreement, no more and no less. However, there are particular hacks running around on the internet that you can do with the AAA PC. So I won't get into that per se, but you will have to agree to the license agreement before you can move forward. You know, just one of those things that you got to do. So, and setup comprises really nothing more than selecting the type of keyboard you have. You know, I'm unsure right now why they would do it just, you know, I mean, the American model, and I believe they're only selling it to, I suppose, English-speaking countries, perhaps maybe China, I don't know. But its availability is in the U.S. mainly, and so they ask you to choose which keyboard you have, and you have a drop-down list that you can choose from, whether it be German, French, Italian, what have you. And basically, that's it for the setup. It'll go through its, you know, what PCs normally do to set up. You hear a lot of, well, in this case, you don't hear any hard disk moving around or doing anything like that, as it's a solid state drive, and basically it's literally noise free. So once you are done with the setup, which doesn't take much longer than say 5 minutes, you know, for the computer to boot up, to agree to the license agreement, and then to select your keyboard, you will come to the front page or the home screen, if you will, with a bunch of tabs on top: internet, work, learn, play, settings, and favorites. Then a help at the very right corner, upper right corner of the screen. And in front of you, you'll see some icons for various things that you want to do, considering which tab that you want to look under. The first tab is the internet tab, and that's probably the best place to start. I'll get into my opinion of it and the use of the PC a little bit later on in this segment. But essentially, you can get on the internet, of course. There's Messenger, Instant Messenger, I believe it. Yeah, it probably is Microsoft Instant Messenger. You have your webmail. You can go to Google Docs, a Wikipedia, internet radio. You can also fiddle around with your, or at least check to see your wireless network at the very beginning and get that all set up. And bundled with it is Skype also. As far as the user interface is concerned, and I'll just let you in on just a tiny little bit here, you can have your choice of three types of color schemes. You can use the default of cream, white, beige, what have you, color screen, and also choose from a brownish theme and a green theme, so you get a little bit of choice there. So, you know, I mean, that's neither here nor there, really, just to let you know that you're able to choose your color scheme. And basically, once the computer is turned on, it's basically ready to go right out of the box. I had to do a little bit of configuration for the Wi-Fi and try to figure out how to get the encryption, you know, key in there. But all in all, it took about 10 minutes to get that all working. And from there, I was able to go to various types of places. But before I go into that, let's take a look more at what the other tabs are. Now, I mentioned the internet tab. There is also a work tab. Oh, and by the way, that brown theme is called Sunset, and the green theme is called Green. And, of course, the default theme is, well, default. So let's go on to the work tab and see what that's all about. And you, if you take a look at the same time at the pictures on freshubuntu.org, we can just go through this real quickly. On the work tab, you have an accessories drop-down menu, and it includes very limited selection of tools under the work tab. You got a calculator and the ability to change your PIN and a screen capture software. There is right now very limited selection under the work tab. Of course, you can always download other stuff as well. And let's go on to the learn tab. The learn tab has a tremendous amount of icons. Well, excuse me, tremendous, I'm sorry. Relatively tremendous, because these are icons that lead to other pages there. Under the learn tab is the science tab, the language tab, the math tab, paint tab, excuse me, icons. These are all icons. And the web learn icon. And underneath all that, let's say you press the science icon, and it'll lead you to science-based software. So a lot of this is, a lot can be done with this for the student, perhaps. let's check out the Play tab. The Play tab also, again, is very limited. Of course, it's out of the box. Not much is bundled with the software. However, there isn't all that bloatware that you get with other new computers, and I won't say which operating systems they are, but we all know who it is. In any event, under the Play tab, there is a section for games, and you'll see the regular type of Linux games on there, you know, Sudoku maybe, Tux is on there. Let's see, under the Play tab is games, icon for a media player, an icon for a music manager, icon for a photo manager, and a video manager, an icon for your webcam, which controls the use of your webcam, and you can take nice little pictures of yourself, and I did just that, and sound recorder software. So basically, you know, you have the basics here. Under the settings tab, of course, you can change all kinds of things. Under the settings, you can change your desktop. You have an antivirus program on there, changing defaults of your volume, stuff you can do with your printers. You get some system info stuff. They have a disk utility and some diagnostic tools. All in all, you know, very basic configuration items that normally you would expect to have in a regular computer, whether it be a desktop or a full-blown laptop. Of course, there's a favorites tab, which, you know, takes a look at your favorites or stores all your favorites from, say, the internet or maybe even documents that you might like to play with. One of the first things I did actually was to get on the internet, which surprisingly, I actually liked. The internet tab pulls up a browser, and the browser is able to do many, many things that you would expect from a browser, and you can get on several sites. And just to test this out, I went on, primarily the first thing I did was to check if the Flash worked, the Flash plugin. So I went to youtube.com, and that site worked very well on there. Flash worked just fine. You can watch Flash videos on there. I'm sure among many other things, other kinds of videos as well. I went on Twitter, and the JavaScript seemed to be working just fine under Twitter. And where else did I go to? Oh, yeah. I went to Pandora to see if the sound was working fine, and the sound worked perfectly. A little tinny, you know. I don't know, you know, I wouldn't expect, you know, beautiful sound coming out of this computer, but I would say it's almost as good as the laptop I own. So, you know, you don't have to worry too much about sound, although, you know, it depends on how you use this thing, and I'll get to that a little bit later. Let's check out some of the programs that I was looking at. It was, I opened up the Music Manager, and it looks somewhat like Amarok. It may be Rhythmbox. I'm entirely unsure at this time. Suffice it to say that it has a playlist on one side, several actions that you can do. I'm pretty sure that this looks a bit like Rhythmbox, but maybe you can let me know whether it is or not, and I'd be happy to mention it again in the podcast. Some of the software included, as well as like a periodic table. You get a planetarium, the media player, your typical WIT media player. Now, the default media on that's bundled on the Triple E PC is Windows Metafiles, or WMV, Windows Metafiles for video. And that got me to wonder a little bit. And so, enough of the look and feel. This, the look, essentially, it comes in a few different colors, but we have the pearl white one here in front of us, and it's a beautiful little computer. Oh, roughly the size of maybe two of my hands, and my hands might be, you know, 4 inches wide, maybe, you know, each hand. So, you know, a little over 7 inches horizontally. Be that as it may, it is quite a cramped keyboard. And now, for a guy like me, I'm rather, you know, I'm thin, I'm an ectomorph, as they say. My hands are slightly smaller, you know, like, as I said, 4 inches across. And they can get somewhat comfortable setting on the buttons there on the QWERTY keyboard. It's a full QWERTY keyboard. However, the fingers are quite cramped together, and typing out something was a bit laborious and took a little getting used to, but once you get used to it, it's just fine. Now, say if you're a bigger guy and your hands are larger, then you might have a little bit of trouble writing your thesis report on here, but and maybe even simple emails. But again, it all depends on how you use this thing. You are able to write, you know, whatever you wish on here because it comes with OpenOffice, the Office suite. And so it can do presentations. You can write documents on here. You could write a book if you wanted to. But you come up against a limitation, and that quite honestly is the four gigabyte flash drive, and storage might be an issue, you know, later on down the road. 4 gigabytes is quite a bit of space, but personally, I think it could use maybe 16, just as the baseline storage requirement. But that's just me. So anyway. It does come with OpenOffice. I tried to type something on there. The quick brown cow jumped over the lazy dog. I had to do it 2 or 3 times before I got it right. And then from there on, I did it a couple more times and no problem. No problem whatsoever. But then again, my hands are slightly smaller than average or average pair of hands. I don't know nowadays. I'm 5'8", about 140, like I said, thin. So if size is an issue for you, you might want to consider using a full-blown keyboard with this thing. It's got USB ports, so you can plug in a USB keyboard if you wanted to, and it also has Bluetooth, so that's a plus in my book. So you can get a Bluetooth keyboard. So let's take a look at some of the other things that are on here. Again, there's a lot of software on here for the student. There's a fraction tutorial. I don't know if, sixth graders can afford something like this, but hey, they bundle it with them, and who knows, maybe they have parents who are well off. As mentioned before, there's a periodic table. There's a planetarium, which is kind of nice, and pretty much that's, it comes bundled with quite a bit. I really like the selection of programs, but note that really is kind of focused for the learning environment, or maybe some real light internet browsing and stuff like that, basically. And it really is my opinion. However, it's powerful enough that you can probably do many other things, and you could. It's bundled with lots of other types of software as well. So I am looking at this, and I wanted to check out what the files were like and what kind of extensions they had, and basically all the extensions were Windows related, and I of course Zandros, the company, the corporation, is one of the companies that made agreements with Microsoft, and so they're using that to their advantage, and they have media in here that are Windows Media Video and Windows Media Audio, WMA, as well. So, but it can play MP3s, and it does play, other things as well, OGG files also. So that comes all bundled with it, too. So in my humble opinion, of course, I think it's a nice little, handy little PC to have around when you want to do something real quick. Or perhaps just listen to some music while you're, sitting at Starbucks and sitting and sipping your latte, perhaps. As far as real work is concerned, you can do those things. You have the ability to do presentations on there with OpenOffice and the ability to show them as well. So what I thought was impressive with this tiny little machine, and believe me, it's quite tiny, even for me, was the bundling of a webcam and a microphone as well. Now, the webcam, you'll see it, it's, typical placement of the webcam right there at the top of your screen, right in the middle, and you can't miss it. I've got pictures on the site. You can go to that. The microphone was a little bit harder to find. Now, typically, I would have found the microphone, of course, right next to where the webcam was. It's that way on my laptop. There's stereo mics on either side of the webcam that I have, and was trying to look for the same thing on the Asus, but you have to look underneath to find the microphone, and it's a small little dot right in the middle underneath the keyboard at the front of the computer where you would normally find the mouse pad, which is a tiny little mouse pad, by the way, no larger than 2 inches diagonally. And a lot of the software, again, is educational type software and internet access type software. Now, I want to go to a user who also has one of these PCs or talked about it. He sent me an email about the computer, and let me read it to you. This is from Emmett, a.k.a. Cafe Ninja, who is has been listening to the podcast for a time, he says. He's interested in the EEE PC, and he says both for professional and personal use. He has an IT department who ordered one for him to test for on-field and on-call field deployment, network engineering type work, and he's looking for a personal use one in the house for a family of four. And he states, and I quote him, "I have to say that it has exceeded my expectations given 2 qualifications, and I'll mention those right now. He says, number one, for daily or frequent use, external mouse, a keyboard, and monitor are almost a must. With those things, it seems like a standard PC for normal activity. No, it's not a high-end video game machine. It's not a high-end video editing machine. It may not even be a podcast editing machine. But he does recommend one for home use, an external mouse and keyboard, as well as a monitor. And number two, you'll be computing in the cloud computing. That is to say, you don't work with much stuff on the local machine. Again, you come up to that 4 gigabyte storage limit, and that really limits you to a lot of stuff. Reading on, quoting him, "I understand your sentiments about trusting the likes of Google for everything, but that may be a bit of an extreme. I would say you have the perfect grasp of the client-server model of computing, but in my house, the solution is to turn my wife's aging Ubuntu PC into the house server. Apps open over the local network using exporting easily. Shared disk space as well as attached printer become internal network resources, and there's no need for huge apps or files to be directly on the EEE PC." So EEE PC makes a nice little network type of kiosk, if you will, being served media, applications, documents, that kind of thing from a server inside of the house. That is how he's using it. He goes on to say, "I have to say that this is probably the best piece of first generation equipment I played with and will make the investment to support the continued development and improvement of what is not only a good product, but one that also supports the users. Asus has a very liberal warranty policy that won't void if you upgrade your RAM. They have the best I can tell, followed the GPL by posting the code." Let me read what his current setup is, Emmett's current setup. He has native Zandros on the 4 gigabyte solid-state drive, and EEE Zubuntu on an 8 gigabyte USB key. So he's got the master boot record and grub installed on the USB key, and that means if he attaches it to any EEE PC and boot from it, he'll have his info, his account, all that kind of stuff always with him. This also allows me to reboot the native disk and let any guest use it in the default mode from Asus. And then I can wow them with Ubuntu from the USB key. That would be cool. That would be kind of cool for him to, you know, Emmett, if you'd like, you can come on the show and teach us all how to get Ubuntu on an 8 gigabyte USB key. That would be kind of cool. Again, this is from Cafe Ninja, a.k.a. Emmett. Thank you very much, Emmett, for sending me that email. That was perfect. Perfect timing. Thank you, and you're on the show. Hey, Cafe Ninja. I know a lot of ninjas, too, but me, personally, I'm more of the Shaolin Temple monk kind of guy. So, but that wouldn't make a real cool, you know, Skype name. Shaolin Temple Monk. Maybe. Who knows? I might give it a try one of these days. So, anyway, as I was playing with the EEE PC, I liked it as well. It was very easy. I didn't have to, you know, because of the long battery life, I could just unplug it and go for most of the day. I'm on it off and on. I'm on the internet off and on throughout the day. So, it's as easy as flipping over the screen, pushing a button, turning it on, and pop it up, and a couple clicks later, you're on the internet, browsing around, and you can hit your favorite sites. Again, I get on Twitter every now and again. I went on Pounce. I listen to Pandora, YouTube, all that good stuff. Makes a real nice, really, really nice, just all-around family PC, as he said. Just hook it up to a keyboard, mouse, and monitor, and you've got yourself a nice little internet type of PC that you can put in, say, the kitchen, you know, and it's perfect for places like that, the kitchen or the den or something like that, where there's lots of traffic, because this is a quote-unquote a shockproof piece of machinery, as there are no moving parts in it, which is astounding to me. And like I said, there is no noise coming out of it, relatively zero noise coming out of this PC, which is great, especially if you like peace and quiet and would rather hear, you know, music coming out of Pandora if you can get it. So a couple of things that I, you know, would suggest, but might increase the, you know, the retail amount of the computer from the quoted $399 from Amazon. A touch screen would be really nice with a swivel mount screen. My brother has a Fujitsu Lifebook U series that I'm trying to get Kubuntu on there and get all everything working together. There's a couple of things that I need to do, find a driver for it and customize the Xorg file. But other than that, it's a nice little tiny computer, about the size, a little bit smaller than the Triple EPC, but it's running Windows Vista with 1 gigabyte of RAM, which makes it a little slow. It's the Home Vista Premium. But this thing has a swivel mount screen that you can swivel around and shut the case. And because of the touch screen, you can go basically do much of everything you normally would, you know, using the computer. You know, scratching out some email by, you know, the hunt and peck method with the on-screen keyboard, or just peruse the internet if you wanted to. Just a nice tiny little added option. However, it might add, you know, a couple $100 and turn a, you know, under $400 PC to an under $600 PC, you know. But to me, I think still worth it. And as far as another improvement would go, I would consider, if they made one, adding a 16 gigabyte solid state drive, you know, that would fit into that thing. I know that they do make them, because I believe that they make them for the MacBook Air. They have a 16 gigabyte one and a 32 gigabyte one that they just, which is really just 2 16 gigabytes, you know, pasted together. And basically that's about it. I mean, I'm running Ubuntu on my old laptop with 30 gigabytes of hard disk space, and I haven't even touched, you know, the upper half of the storage capacity. So 16 gigabytes might seem like the sort of sweet spot for it, but those are the two improvements that I'd make. But again, it might make a $400 PC into a $600 PC, or maybe even more. So all in all, I give the Triple EPC a thumbs up, as I've said before, and I'm considering buying the next upgrade model, the 8 gigabyte model, and just to have around with me, you know, to you know, work in the kitchen or work in the den or wherever. It's nice, little portable, again, under 1 kilogram, and I am also by far impressed by how they have packaged it, what kinds of things are bundled with it, and the operating system. Now, me, I'm an Ubuntu guy. I would most definitely put Ubuntu on there and see what I could do with it. There are, again, as I mentioned, tons of hacks for the Asus Triple E PC out on the internet, and I won't go that way. That's really not the focus of this segment. It was just to highlight the Asus Triple E PC from Asus Computing, and again, a thumbs up, and thank you very much to Emmett for sending me a email about it, and perhaps he can one day get on the show. All right, that is it, and thanks again. And back to Harlem and Peter with the rest of the show. Wait a minute, that's me. Okay, I better get going. Bye. All right, we're back, and so hope you enjoyed that Asus review. Thank you very much to Nightwise, who really wanted to hear about it. So there you go, Nightwise. There's your review. I give it a thumbs up, by the way. So.
All right. So now, I forget, was that one, is Nightwise going to be getting himself an ASUS?
Yes, he is. He's going to be getting himself one, and
good.
Lucky guy, I would say.
Cool. All right, what should we talk about now?
Well, I think you have a couple of tech segment dealies, don't you?
Couple of little ones.
Okay.
Let's talk about one.
Okay.
We talk about Twitter almost every week here. And that's because I think Twitter's just cool. I'm liking it a lot.
Let me interject here. I've been a little bit annoyed at it for the past couple of days because it's been
down all the time.
It's been down. Some of my tweets have gone to the black hole, as they say, and
ooh.
So. Anyway, so it's still a nice platform. I still use it a lot, and. You know, it's a minor annoyance for many of us who are Twitter addicted. So.
Yeah, it is annoying when it's down. You know, you got to remember it's pretty much free. They're still not doing any ads in the tweets or anything like that. So, you know, for what you're paying for, I think Twitter's an awesome service.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yep. But I started looking around yesterday. Actually, I believe I saw something on the Productive Linux weblog. Nathan posted a link to Zen Twitter, which uses a little library for a GNOME pop-up to allow you to Twitter, you know, very easily. It's just like a one-shot how to send a Twitter thing. And as I was Googling around for it, I'd forgotten the name of it. I stumbled across another person's little script, just a little one-liner, which uses the curl, the C-U-R-L command.
Mm-hmm.
And so I modified it ever so slightly just to make it silent. And there's no error checking on it, so that if Twitter is down when you're trying to use this, you won't actually send an update, and you won't know that you haven't sent an update until you go back to your own account to check. But this program is so short that I figured I would just read it out. And here it goes. Line 1. --bin/sh. New line. All right, you with me so far, Harlan?
So far.
So far, okay. So we have the shebang bin sh. Yep. Next line is curl, C-U-R-L, space, --silent, space, --basic, space, --user. Then what you want to do is put in a space, and in quotes, type in your Twitter username, a full colon, and your Twitter password, and then close quotes, followed by --data-ASCII, then a space, and then, here's where it gets a little tricky, but follow along, double quote, status equals, back quote, echo, that's ECHO, space, $, @, vertical bar, space, TR, single quote, single quote, single quote, plus sign, single quote, back quote, double quote, space, double quote, http://, twitter.com/statuses/update.josn, double quote. There you go.
Wow.
It's a mouthful. But you know what? I'm going to post it so you can just copy and paste it and don't have to retype anything.
Hey, there you go. Now that's something. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's fun. I've got a little command line thing. I saved it in a little file called Twitter. I dropped it into my home bin directory, so it's in my path, made it executable, and then basically anywhere from the command prompt now, I can just type Twitter, I am updating Twitter right now, enter. And, you know, whatever you type as command line arguments, it just throws up into a Twitter feed up to the twitter.com statuses.
Nice.
And,
now, did you do an alias with that, or just it's an actual executable file?
I made an actual executable file. I saved it as a file called Twitter. But I could have, I suppose I could have aliased that, couldn't I?
Yeah, there's several. Yeah, several ways that you could have done it, but.
Yep.
Very
I just
nice.
Saved it as a little shell script, and yeah, it's working great. I'm liking it so far.
Cool. And now you aren't able to get tweets to you using that, are you?
No, this is just for posting. This would not be reading, but that could also be done easily enough.
Nice. So, very nice.
This is a one-way Twitter.
Well, all you geeks out there who live on the command line, this is your chance, being a part of the Twitter community. Now, just to be fair, I will have to say this, that I'm on Pounce as well, and so are you, Peter. But before Pounce announced opening up their registration, which is open to everyone now, you don't need an invite, I had like maybe 16 or 17 friends. But since then, I have grown to 32 friends, which is kind of a neat little thing. Twitter is still, I think, a much more powerful thing, if you can say that, just because of the sheer number of people who are on Twitter. But there are so many features on Pounce that it's very hard to overlook. You can view the videos and download files and exchange documents as well on Pounce much more easier than you could on Twitter. So, Twitter beware, I guess. But interesting little platform as well, Pounce and Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about that, too. We're going to do another article soon, I think, on aggregating all of your little Web 2.0 things into one location.
Yes.
But, Twitter, I think one of the reasons I like it so much is that it's just simple. You know, it's all pretty simple.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. I like it, too. So, anyway, I think of Twitter as like a first-grade teacher, you know. A first grade teacher is kind of a person who you would just tell anything to and you would just blurt it out. You know, it's kind of like my son. I have a 6-year-old son who's in first grade, and right in the middle of class, he'll just talk to the teacher and say, you know, I got a Wii today and I can play Guitar Hero on it, blah, blah, blah. So.
Well, all right.
It brings out little six-year-old in you. So.
There you go. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/Nikolaitis, NIKOLAIDIS.
And if you want to follow me, you can follow me at twitter.com/HARLEM. Both of our badges are going to be on the new website, not new website, but revamped website at freshubuntu.org. Look for the badges there, and you can, if you have a Twitter account, you can follow us.
So, sweet.
There you go.
So one last little tiny tech tidbit in the spirit of maintaining things on the command line. I stumble across this over on Lifehacker. But we've talked about how with Gutsy, how easy it is to enable all of the proprietary codecs and things to allow you to play DVDs and the like. And if you want to play DVDs but you don't like fiddling around through the add and remove software, or if you're the type of person who feels like you need to install stuff before your media player prompts you to do so, and if you're the type who likes to do stuff from the command line, then have I got a deal for you. I'm sorry, does that just sound lame? Whatever. Anyway, all you need to do if you want to enable DVD playback in Ubuntu via the command prompt is execute this command. Sudo apt-get space install space totem-zine, that's totem-xine, space libxine1-ffmpeg, M-P-E-G, space libdvdread3. We'll post all this again, so you don't have to try to type it all up, just copy and paste. And then once you've apt-get installed all of those puppies, you execute a following command, one more, and that's sudo space /user/share/doc/libdvdread3/install-css.sh. Done.
Man, you are just an alphabet today.
Oh, man, I'm like an explosion in a punctuation factory.
Well, that's a really nice little tech segment. I appreciate all your hard work. And do you have anything else that you want to say about that, before you explode?
No, I've exploded. I'm good.
Yep.
I'm
good. Okay, cool. It's just like a typewriter keyboard just blew up in your face.
CCS
dash. So anyway, are we just about done here?
I am pretty much done.
What about did you do that link from productivelinux.com?
Oh, no, I didn't. Linode, okay. That's right. Oh, shoot. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, no problem.
Yes, Lintube, lintube.com. It's another article I pulled off of Productive Linux last week, I think. It's basically a bunch of Linux-related videos, and there's all kinds of things related to Linux. I've looked at a few of them. The one that's at the top of the page right now, it's called Tux and Girls.
Ooh.
And
sounds very provocative.
Has a picture of a girl wearing Linux underwear.
Wow.
That's not exactly what I was expecting, but hey, I'm glad to complain. Anyway, if you're into videos and you're into Linux, and apparently if you're into girls, then
you if you're a little lonely.
Yeah, I didn't know what that kind of was. But, okay. Well, anyway, there you go.
All righty. Well, that's it for the news. And so now I think we have your final Manpage Minute this week. It came in three parts. The final Find Manpage Minute Part 3 coming up next.
Manpage Minute Find Part 3. I had to throw this quickie in there. In addition to the mtime and atime commands, there's also a dash mmin or mminutes option. And this basically returns files whose data has been modified in the last so-and-so minutes. So if you say find dot dash mmin space 5, you're going to get back all the files that have been modified in the last 5 minutes in the working directory. And, boy, I wish I had known about the mminutes command a long time ago, because I remember one time we were trying to have somebody upload a file to my server, and we just could not find the file no matter what. And it turns out that they had misnamed or mislabeled the file. So we were watching the server waiting for this file to show up, and it just never showed up. And the reason was it had a different file name. The file was there all along, it just didn't have the name that we were looking for. So this would be a great way to catch something like that. If you're waiting in a directory for something to show up, and this could be the output of a program, maybe you're looking for a log file or an error log to be dumped, but you don't know the name of the file, or you're watching your FTP server for someone to upload a file, or you want to watch your mail spool directory or a printer spool directory and, you know, watch for a file to just show up there. You could do this a number of ways, but this way you'll be able to just say, you know, show me all the files that have shown up within the last minute, and not have to sort through all the old files in the same at the same time. So here's a practical use for the find command with the dash mmin option.
All right. Well, we are back, and I think that's going to do it for us this week. Sorry for talking so quickly this week, but we just had a bunch of things that we need to do and get done. So we are just going to leave it at that. Don't forget to stop by the website. It has been revamped. I upgraded the installation, WordPress installation, and put a new template up. It's at freshubuntu.org. There happens to be a big old picture of me in there, but Peter, we might as well try and get your picture on there as well. If you would like, you can send me a picture, and we'll try and get you on there too. But
sure.
It's revamped. It's red. It's Fresh Ubuntu. It's got a new catchphrase there and a Flickr stream on the bottom. What else can I say about it? Oh, it'll have a logo coming up soon, because I have been playing around with Inkscape, and hopefully the logo will turn out okay. And then pretty soon we can all have some t-shirts. So,
t-shirts are good.
Yep. So that's going to do it for this week. Thank you very much for joining us. Remember, you can send email to either Peter or I at PeterN, that's PETERN, at freshubuntu.org, or at Harlem at freshubuntu.org. Let's not forget Peter's blog at blog.nikolaitis.com, and I believe there's a link on my website for that already. And let's see, the music was provided by Iota Promonet, and we just thank you and have a great and wonderful week, and we'll talk to you again very soon. Thank you very much. Any last
have a good one.
Parting words, Peter?
No, I'm fresh out of them.
Fresh out.
Yeah.
You got it all out earlier with all the CSS dash dash.
How am I supposed to follow, you know, what am I supposed to say to top echo dollar at vertical bar TR quote, 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 plus quote, back quote, double quote? I can't top that.
No, you can't. And neither can I. So that's going to do it for this week. Have a great day. Bye-bye.